This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on December 17th, 2015. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
All right, the next item on the agenda is item 3. This is draft advisory opinion 2015-13, Reed. And today, yes, two of the commissioners are recused and will be stepping out. Stepping down. Okay. Stepping down from the dais. And we have Jessica Selenkoff and Bob Knopp from OGC here to discuss the matter, and also Mark Elias and Jonathan Burkon, if you want to come to the council table, from Perkins Coie. They are counsel for the requesters. Welcome to both of you. Thank you for being here. Ms. Selenkoff, would you like to make a presentation?
Thank you, Chair Rabel. Good morning, commissioners. Agenda documents 1568A and B present two draft advisory opinions in response to a request by Senator Harry Reid. After decades in the Senate, including 8 years as Senate Majority Leader, Senator Reid is retiring. He asks two questions. First, whether he may use campaign funds to pay the costs of a full-time assistant after his retirement for certain enumerated tasks. And second, whether his leadership PAC may pay the winding down costs of the Senate office. The drafts differ on question one. Draft A concludes that Senator Reid may use campaign funds to pay the assistant as proposed, so long as the assistant does not engage in tasks that would also be personal use, as described in the draft. Draft B concludes that any payment to the assistant, except for assistance in the storage and archiving of materials to wind down the office, would itself be prohibited personal use of campaign funds. On question two, both drafts conclude that under the Act and Commission regulations, the leadership PAC may pay the winding down costs of the Senate office. The Commission received one comment on their drafts from the requester. And though these may not be the drafts you're looking for, I'm available to answer any questions that you may have.
Nice. Well done.
Are there any comments, questions from commissioners?
Well,
Commissioner Goodman.
Let me just say, this issue of personal use vexes us. It's a case-by-case determination. It has vexed us in the enforcement context, particularly the area of litigation. You know, there are cases that fall on both sides of the issue. It is, however, one issue that has generally united the Commission. The libertarian view of the interpretation of our code and regulations largely depends on the personal use prohibition, because the personal use prohibition to libertarians is what divides, it is the dividing line between what is personal, what constitutes bribery and gives rise to direct corruption, versus what is free speech, and what does not go into the pocket to enrich the individual office holder. And so this is one area where we are in court right now with a former senator suing over personal use. We are in court right now with a former candidate for Senate in Delaware suing over less than $20,000 in personal use. Although it's not public, we had a vote this week to on the issue of personal use. So it is incredibly important that we draw this line very carefully. Because it is, for me at least, it is what allows me to argue that campaign money is free speech and free association and funds those activities. So this request asks us to take essentially all members of Congress and interpret their lives after they were in Congress to allow them to use those campaign funds to essentially choose to continue to be public people. Many members of Congress go off into the twilight, do not intend to correspond and give a lot of speeches, do not intend to travel to continue to speak about their past tenures in office. And so it is a very generic request, a very ordinary request for activities that every member of Congress will have to some extent. It is not unique. It is not necessitated. These activities are not necessitated by one's former tenure in office the way they were in the Kerry case. And this is where we often have disputes here in the commission is the extent of relatedness, the extent of sort of a residual obligation that arose out of a campaign. So my fundamental concern about where we're being asked to open this door further than winding down costs is that the benefits that will accrue to all members of Congress under this read will be all campaign funds, will then be available to fund the administrative overhead of being a former member of Congress, and in to maintain their speaking, writing, so long as they discuss the fact that they were a former member of Congress. And there is nothing particularly unique or necessary about this choice. And the fact that many members of Congress choose to do this and choose to do it at the expense of think tanks, nonprofits, shows that there are many other ways to fund this choice after you leave office, but it is not necessitated by your former service or your former candidate status. So that's why I am leaning toward the draft B before us today. It's because this line is important and because this request appears to open up there is no end to it. Every member of Congress will always be a former member of Congress, will always have requests to speak, write, publish, fact check, do all of the things that are here. And what it essentially suggests is that campaign funds can go with members of Congress after they leave to, without end, speak, write, discuss their former tenures in office. And that's what I'm struggling with here, is the generic nature of this post-retirement, what would essentially be a post-retirement pension, administrative pension fund.
Thank you. I mean, you're right. We generally are in concert on the issue of personal use, and personal use is a major concern. I do not see this request to be as broad as you are suggesting. In fact, I think it is clearly constrained in a way that would only be applicable not to every single member of Congress who ever sits in Congress for 1 2-year term and then leaves. This is applicable to a person who has been the majority leader for many years, who has performed an important function in our government for many years, who probably during that time had so much to do that he was unable to do some of the things that's necessary not only for the winding down of the office, but also to be able to communicate to the American public as a important figure and public official, not necessarily as just a person who's been there a couple of years and is trying to make personal use of their campaign funds. In fact, it's being constrained. He obviously can't be used for any activity that will remunerate him in any way, so he can't do it for book tours or for any other activities that are beyond what would be a public purpose here. And I see this draft A, which I wholeheartedly support, as being the appropriate mechanism for a person who it will continue to be doing a public service as a historic figure in our country to achieve purposes that are important to the American public. So I myself don't think in this case the line is hard to draw.
I would just argue that this request for draft A would indeed allow every member of Congress to have an administrative fund to travel around the world on a book tour, so long as they are not earning a royalty from the book, and so long as the book addresses the work they did when they were a member of Congress. And it is too subjective a line to say that just because one member of Congress was there longer than another, how do we ever draw that line? Who was important in the Congress and who was not?
It's not just about length. It's about position
who,
as well.
Who? I mean, how do we draw that line? We think you were important enough to walk away with an administrative slush fund. We don't think you were important enough. I've just finished
reading.
It's
not based. I'm sorry. You do have the floor, but I don't want you to think that I'm saying that it should be applicable and that we're going to be making subjective decisions about who's important. We're making decisions about the position that was held in our system.
So is your position that A will only apply to leadership positions?
That's how I read it.
Where will you draw the line? Will you draw the line at a subcommittee chairman or ranking member? I just finished reading the biography of Jack Kemp, and Morton Kondracki calls him the most important member of Congress who never became president of the 20th century. Would Jack Kemp have been important enough, even though Jack Kemp was never a committee chairman? Was never in, well, may have been deputy whip at one point. Is that high enough? Under draft A?
Look, this is as you have said many times and we've discussed, AO requests apply to the facts that are before us. We cannot be opining about any of your, potential individuals, Jack Kemp or anybody else. Those will come before us later, and we can make those determinations at that time. This one relates to someone that I think comes clearly within the commission precedents and the law, and so I think that it in this particular circumstance, it's clearly permissible.
So just so I understand, you support allowing all former leaders of either the Democratic Party or the Republican Party in the House or Senate to have a perpetual administrative fund with whatever funds are left over in their campaign account, but not other members, but draft A will not necessarily allow other members of Congress to do that.
I support this draft A as it relates to the question that's presented, is may Senator Reid, I'm not talking about former leaders or anybody else, may he use the funds to pay the salary and related costs, which I believe we agree on, and may Senator Reid use leadership PAC funds to pay wind down costs of his Senate office. That's what we're looking at today, and that's what I support. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask a question of Mr. Elias on this one as well. As you indicate in your request and also in the letter that you submitted with respect to this draft, that the carry AO is probably the one that's the most on point. It's definitely a pretty expansive. In fact, as you point out, it was about an individual who was no longer a candidate who was using campaign funds to defend themselves from charges arising from activities that happened before that individual ever ran for office.
Correct. It involved former Senator Kerry.
Yes. Yeah, Bob Kerry, the Nebraska senator, as opposed to the current Secretary of State.
Accusations that arose regarding Senator Kerry's service in Vietnam, Senator Bob Kerry's service in Vietnam. The allegations arose after he was out of the Senate.
Right.
And the allegations involve conduct, you know, from years and years ago, from the Vietnam War.
Right.
So just to clarify for the record what the...
And it's, you know, it's a very... that sets a pretty broad standard on what former members may do with their campaign funds. At the very end of that opinion, the commission, perhaps in an effort to contain the reach of that opinion, near the end says, the commission notes that this is a unique situation, and as indicated above, this opinion's conclusion is based on the case-by-case determination provisions of 11 CFR 113.1 G1, Romanet 2. This opinion does not establish any general rule regarding the use of campaign funds by former candidates or federal office holders for public relations expenses. I wasn't here at that time. I was a young associate. I don't recall all the to and fro that went into this matter. But clearly, I believe your interpretation would be that this advisor opinion isn't necessarily just a one-time, one-train-only situation. That this established a broader precedent than just the unique circumstances that arose in the Bob Kerry advisory opinion request.
So I think the answer is yes and no. I mean, to begin with, a point that I think the chair makes, which is exactly right, and which I echoed, frankly, or I said, and which, frankly, the Republican commissioners were echoing only a few weeks ago when I was here, is that every advisory opinion is about the people before you. So in some sense, every advisory opinion ends with a admonition that the advisory opinion is for the facts that are presented. So these are not rulemakings, they are advisory opinions. And yes, advisory opinions are cited, advisory opinions are looked to for legal theories, but the advisory opinion is for what it is. And as you remember a few weeks ago when I was here and we were talking about super PACs and event size and the like, the disagreement I was having with some of the Democratic commissioners was, we don't need to decide what to do with every other super PAC. I'm here on behalf of two actual super PACs. And likewise, I don't think that, so in some respects, the Kerry language reflects the fact that Bob Kerry, former Senator Kerry, was an individual. He faced a actual set of circumstances and that opinion related to him. Now, and likewise, we are here on behalf of an individual who is, in fact, not a leader, not some leader, but is, in fact, has been the majority leader of the United States Senate. That is, in fact, a relatively small group of people who might have substantially identical facts. Now, what I do think is relevant from the Kerry AO, and Commissioner Goodman, I think is a fair point, is that we do look to the AOs for the legal principles. And I am, I sort of vary between bemusement and dismay that the Commission, for whatever its reasons, and I will just leave those reasons aside, might abandon what has been actually a pretty workable rule for Democratic and Republican candidates and Democratic and Republican office holders for years, which is a case-by-case determination, and which was embodied in the Kerry AO, and to set that entirely aside in favor of what is a very restrictive, bright-line rule that would, in fact, overrule the Kerry AO. And I think that before the Commission would takes such a fateful step, I would encourage it to think about the fact that that is, in fact, the step it would be taking, because that will have wide-ranging implications. I promise you, it will have wide-ranging implications. on the Republican side as well as the Democratic side, because there are a number of circumstances not presented here in which Republicans and Democrats alike rely on the current interpretations of personal use and the Carrier language. And if, in fact, that is not the case moving forward, and it has, in fact, never been the case because Carrier was just sort of its own thing, that will have wide-ranging implications. And this commission will be embracing those wide-ranging implications in the near future. So that's, I would just think that the commission ought to ponder the importance of taking such a dramatic step in the development of its personal use rules.
Commissioner Goodman,
what if a commissioner adhered to the result of draft B, but wanted to rewrite it to say, I don't find Senator Reid's situation presented here particularly unique or compelling or necessary, and I don't find the activities that Senator Reid proposes to engage in here post-tenure to be particularly unique or necessary like Senator Kerry's. So we have a very fact-specific, we just say we're not persuaded that Senator Reid's activities here exist irrespective of what is essentially a personal choice to remain a public figure and to speak and write and do those things. And what if we were to step back from the broader language and just say we just don't find this one compelling? We just don't find this one to meet the test?
So I think it would be a factual question that you would not find that the expenses at issue, and I'm quoting, would not have occurred if, and now I'm going to put Senator Reid's name in, if Senator Reid had not been a prominent senator and prominent federal candidate. Now, you could make a determination as a factual matter that you believe that the former majority leader, the current Democratic leader, the longest serving Democratic leader, I believe, in the history of the country, is in fact not a prominent senator and a prominent federal candidate. The agency would then be subject to whatever review comes with its factual determinations, but I would say that you would be wrong to do it.
May I interrupt? Yeah. Let's say I concede he is a former long-standing senator. I'm just not convinced that the activities that he proposes to fund here were necessitated by that distinguished and long career in the Senate, that they are a personal choice of his to engage in those things that many people that were also had distinguished careers choose not to do. It is not compelled by, it is not necessitated by any prior campaign or tenure. So I can concede he was important, has had a long distinguished career, and yet the decision to do this after, I do not find that it meets the irrespective test.
Right, and what I'm saying is that I think if you go down that road, then you do have to decide whether to just overturn Kerry and live with the consequences of that, because I don't know how Senator Kerry made any less of a choice post-service to be prominent, to give speeches, to engage in all of the things you just said. And yet the commission based the analysis on the facts that it did and based on the test that it did.
I believe that the commission could say no to this request, consistent with the advisory opinion to Senator Kerry. And we have had to struggle on this very issue in the enforcement context in drawing this line, where, for example, one member, former member, had ongoing litigation. We've had two members, both of whom had ongoing litigation. And the question was, how related or necessary was that ongoing litigation to fund out of campaign funds to his or her prior campaign? And in one case, we said, you know, that litigation directly arose from and was related to a campaign issue, and it is residual after the loss of an election. This one arose, but it's not sufficiently related, and so we have reconciled very similar post-candidacy activities before and said one is and one is not personal use. We could do that here. The facts of Senator Kerry are that as a candidate, he started facing what he considered...
And not as a candidate.
Excuse me?
It was not as a candidate.
It's. I'm sorry, the opinion says it arose during his campaigns and period of being a...
Earlier campaigns. He, at this point, had been retired.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Senator Kerry may also represent sort of the outer limit. But there is language in the Kerry advisory opinion about how this was visited upon him as a consequence of being a candidate and senator necessarily, and it was residual, and it was somewhat unavoidable, and the commission made a very close call. By contrast, one could reconcile a no answer here by saying, this is not a unique circumstance. This is not like the litigation or a specific issue that arose in the campaign. This is an open-ended, generic, post-retirement plan to remain a public figure and to affirmatively engage in public life by publishing, writing, researching, traveling to give speeches. And that is a very different request to continue activities in the future. And it is of a generic sort that all members of Congress would have that choice to do to some extent. I agree that a member of Congress who was in Congress 2 or 4 years may have less claim on his or her time in retirement, may not be invited to speak in Brussels and around the world, but they would be of the same kind of activities, whether one was traveling locally to give speeches to League of Women Voters and Chambers of Commerce versus whether one wants to, you know, travel the world to speak and write and publish. And so my point is, I think that draft B can be reconciled with the Kerry opinion. We draw these lines all the time. And to me, it looks like it's far more generic than what the very specific circumstances that Senator Kerry was facing. We've had to make these tough calls and very difficult distinctions, as I say, in other contexts. You can react to that. I want to give you...
Do you want to respond to that?
I obviously think that I guess I'd offer two reactions. First of all, draft B doesn't actually say that. Okay, so you have asked me whether it could say that. It doesn't, as currently drafted, number one. Number two, I don't think it would come to the right conclusion. I don't think that would be – I don't think reconciling it with Kerry is as easy as you – I haven't seen draft B. I haven't had a chance to – or I guess it would be draft C. I haven't had a chance to react to it. I don't think it's going to be as easy as you propose that it would be. I think it's very difficult to reconcile Kerry with a no answer here. I don't want to prejudge. I have prejudged what I think the right answer is, but I haven't prejudged an analysis because I haven't seen the analysis.
Right, Madam Chair.
Do you have a follow-up to that question, or can we turn to yes, Commissioner Hunter?
I just wanted to talk about following along on what Commissioner Goodman was talking about. So the last time you were here, we did talk about the provision in the statute 52 U.S.C. 30108C1B. Any person involved in a specific transaction or activity which is indistinguishable in all its material aspects from the transaction or activity with respect to which this advisory opinion is rendered may rely on this advisory opinion. And I think maybe... I think we're saying the same thing here that we said the last time you were here, which is when you were here before, the Republicans were saying, or at least I was saying, we don't have to sit around and write and do a rulemaking for every, you know, idea in the world. But if we say yes to you so that one person could fundraise for a candidate, put on a different hat and fundraise for a super PAC or a 501c4 or whoever, any other person similarly situated could do the same thing. And that's the point that at least I was making back then. this is an important provision of the Act, you know, because I don't think it's appropriate for every person to come in and have to ask for an advisory opinion. Of course, unless there's a fact that's materially distinguishable. So under the law, how is it different that Harry Reid was the leader for a very long time, and maybe there's a freshman member of Congress who only stayed one term but was very consequential, you know, did a lot of great things and made a lot of great speeches, and he or she wants to go out and do the same thing. Now, he might not get invited to as many things, but what's the legal distinction there?
Well, the point I was making is two things. First is the direct question I think I was asked is about the language in the Carrier-O, saying right. that it was limited to the facts.
I would have never signed off on that. I didn't vote for that.
Okay.
It doesn't. Right. It to me that runs contrary to the statute.
The entire advisory opinion, or that
particularly that part.
The that it only applies to.
Yeah, I mean that.
Right. So I was harmonizing it by saying, look, in some respects, that's not particularly important language because it is another way of stating that advisory opinions are only relied upon for material, what you just read.
Right.
So the direct answer I was giving was actually to say that language, I think Commissioner Peterson was asking me, what are we to make of that language? And you're saying you don't agree with that language. And I'm saying I don't think that language means very much because I think it's just another way, and I don't know what at the time, whether the commission was just making itself feel better by including it twice. But I think it is just duplicative of the general prohibition, Commissioner Hunter, that you're.
I don't think so. But what I'm asking you is, what is the legally what makes right. it what makes Harry Reid different legally under the personal use statute? Not, I mean, I think we're misreading the provision that I read to you. So moving on from that, what makes him the facts of his tenure materially distinguishable under the personal use provision to the freshman member who did a lot of great things?
So like I said, this was the other part of my answer,
okay.
Commissioner Hunter, is this is what I sometimes find myself having discussion with Democratic commissioners about at these hearings, which is, honestly, I don't think we need to answer that question. Like, I don't know. Maybe there is no distinction. Maybe there is a world of distinction. This isn't a rulemaking. They're not here. Right, those members, those no, freshman members of Congress, aren't before you. So, we sometimes at this agency, and candidly, it is more often among the Democratic commissioners than the Republican commissioners. But here we are with the Republican commissioners trying to figure out if we answer this question, what does it mean for a whole bunch of other things that haven't been asked? So I don't know. I don't know what it would mean for another member of Congress. I don't know what it would mean for a freshman who had no distinguished record. I don't know what it would mean for a freshman who had a lot of distinguished record.
But why are you even bringing up that he's been there for very long? Why is that relevant to the legal question before us?
I think the fact that he is the majority leader of the Senate goes to the nature and volume of work that relates to his official office. If I got in the next advisory opinion, I got a call asking how much time a college intern spent on vetting. If I had not told you that he was the Senate Majority Leader, I would have gotten a call saying, can you tell me more about his tenure? I mean, I think it's a reasonable thing for the commission to consider and know that the person asking the request about post-service activities and the length of time and the scope of the duties was, in fact, a long-serving Senate Majority Leader.
So
now, if your question is, would you have known that if I had not said it?
No, that's not my question.
Oh, okay.
So is the fact that he's been there, I think what you're saying is the fact that he's been there for a long time is legally significant because he has more work to do afterward.
Commissioner, it may be legally significant. You may say it's legally insignificant. What I'm saying is this is the actual request. The person actually before you did all those things.
Because if it's not legally significant, then I don't think we should tie that to the legal analysis that belongs in the factual section where we say it just so happens that he's a distinguished member who served for a long time. But in the legal analysis, it may not be relevant. And so the freshman member might, you know, have the same ability to use the campaign funds after he leaves that the leader does.
Again, this is a you are you are describing a draft that does not exist before me, right? If you're asking is if there was a draft that said, yes, you may do these things,
right,
and the fact that you are the Senate Majority Leader is irrelevant because all members of Congress could do it, that would be a, I guess that would be now draft D. I'd be happy to look at that and offer comment to that as well.
But do you just, I mean, if you want to think about it, that's fine, but just... Are you able to opine on that now? Would there be an issue to say that?
I'd want to see what the analysis was, right.
Okay.
Candidly.
Okay.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just, I think, as now we've talked at length about each advisory opinion request is unique in certain aspects. But as you pointed out, we try to look at past advisory opinions to try to divine the legal principles that are going to guide the commission going forward. And just one other one I wanted to address, going back to the Kerry AO, is it, just to quote the unique circumstances, but talking about the general rule regarding use of campaign funds by former candidates or federal office holders for public relations expenses. I just wanted to address quickly that issue of public relations expenses. We've had a number of AOs that have dealt with that where members have had a scandal or something that's arisen, and the commission has stated that paying for public relations expenses related to that scandal or matter of public concern are permissible uses and don't violate the personal use prohibition. If Kerry were to be considered a advisory opinion that's within that kind of scope of advisory opinions, where this really is not a general personal use considerate, you know, what can you do post retirement with your funds, but it's more a, you know, kind of cabined into the public relations expenses line of advisory opinions. Then that could be potentially be a distinction between the current circumstances and that are presented in the Reed request and the Kerry request. But I just wanted to, and I'll just state out front, I have not landed on a particular position right now, and so I'm asking these not as leading questions or trying to be clever. I'm genuinely trying to figure out how to decide this case in light of what we've said before. And I'll state up front that if I'd been here for Kerry, I'm not sure I would have decided the way that it was decided, but it has been on the books for a decade and a half, I'll trust your representation that it's been relied upon extensively by many members of both parties since that time. And when I first read this, I thought this is pretty much this may be dispositive of the question. And even if I would have decided something differently in the initial instance, we may have to continue to travel down the path that this established. But as I read that, I just wanted to I've been puzzling in my own mind about whether or not this case really stands for a narrower proposition of just the category of expenses relating to public relations and the advisory opinions that have kind of been in that realm, or does this establish a much broader principle that the Reed request would then fit within comfortably? So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, first of all, Mr. Vice Chairman, I'll pay you this compliment, not because you said you're still open-minded, not that all, it sounds like all of you are open-minded. So I don't mean to distinguish from your colleagues, but your questions are always thoughtful and they're appreciated. And I think you've, again, not that all of the questions have not been thoughtful, they have been, but I think you put your finger on something that I think is important. I think that if you were to take a step back and there had never been any of these AOs, like nothing, no carry, no Trafficant, I think was one of the early ones, if I recall, none of these, I think you probably would have put PR services probably more on the personal side than like dealing with things that relate to service in office. I mean, just as like an abstract matter. So I'm not sure it gets you very far if you conceived of the world that way, because it's that's actually cabining it into that box is a really big box. I mean, something that is not present here, but like the whole line of cases or MERS or AOs involving legal fees would seem actually cleaner if you were starting with a blank slate than, you know, than that. And so I'm not sure cabining it, I'm not sure where that goes.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I
okay. And if I could just ask, now, the, shifting to the second question, which dealt with leadership PACs.
Yes.
Now, when I first read this, I have to admit that my my prior life as chief counsel at the Senate Rules Committee kicked in, and I and it because when I read this question initially, and it relates to winding down expenses. Winding down expenses have been categorized, I think, even by rule, are considered to be official expenses of an office holder. And at least I don't know if things have changed in the 7.5 years since I've left, but I remember issues coming up whether or not leadership PAC funds could be used for officially, you know, expenses related to one to official expenses, official office holder expenses, I should say. And so that set off a bout of nostalgia, or at least questions that I'd previously had in my mind. And I just want to clarify that the scope and the nature of the argument you're making on this front. It's basically we have to ignore whatever Senate rules might say with respect to leadership PAC funds and how they may be used for official office holder expenses. Under what's formerly 439A, we have a list of expenses that are permissible for authorized committees, and it lists it goes through the enumerated list. But what you're saying, but you're not, when it comes to leadership PAC, there's no kind of analogous provision, and you're coming to us.
Analogous provision.
For leadership PAC funds, what may be a permissible use for it?
Because the personal use prohibition.
Yes. Yeah, the reason I ask this is when I first read this, and I thought the argument might be being made that you're making the argument that since a contribution received by a leadership PAC may be considered a contribution accepted by a candidate under what was formerly 439A, therefore, since those under that provision. You know, the ordinary and necessary expenses incurred in connection with duties as an office holder may be paid under that. Therefore, leadership PAC funds should be able to be used to defray the cost of winding down. And obviously, if that were the line of analysis, then that would apply the personal use prohibition to leadership PACs, which has been a subject of much discussion beyond this advisory opinion and that
right.
kind of triggered some alarm bells in my head, and
right.
as I've been puzzling through, I take it that is not the line of analysis that you are applying in your request.
No,
with respect to how leadership PAC funds may potentially be permissible to be used to pay down winding down expenses.
So I thought when I saw draft B, what it was going to say was. And I was wrong. But what I thought draft B would say is there are no personal use rules that apply to leadership PAC funds. You know, go forth. Because I know this has been an issue that I was, candidly, I'll give you insight into my thinking, I was trying not to wade into. It would be a perfectly acceptable response to say, yes, you can use leadership PAC funds because they're leadership PAC funds, and you know, we just don't think that personal use, the prohibitions apply at all. Or others could say, we think it does, but they're okay here. Like, I was honestly, I thought the fault line in this discussion might actually hinge on that, and I was trying not to get in a deadlock where I was caught up in that. If I can stay agnostic for the purposes of today,
sure.
on that fault line, but
okay.
you're correct that we are not advocating that they do that the personal use rules do apply.
Mm-hmm.
We are also not looking to alienate any vote from someone who thinks they apply.
Okay, I gathered that as I was going over this late again last night. Because as I was looking at it, in some ways, the analysis that's in the draft could almost be switched. You could almost say, "Well, use your leadership PAC funds to pay for the assistant, and use your authorized committee to pay for the winding down." And this would be a
like I said,
slam dunk
I envision draft B would lead with the like, "We don't think there's any restrictions on leadership back funds. I had assumed that with a six-person commission, and I don't think it's probably any different with four-person, it's probably less true, even more true with a four-person commission, that we were going to get four votes on that proposition. So I was trying to, in the draft, frankly, just not engage one with a, not engage one side or the other into a feeling like I was tipping that scale. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. Eminent sense to me. Unless there are more questions for Mr. Elias, I wonder whether we might. If he agrees to extend the time, that we might put this over so that perhaps we can have discussions amongst ourselves and reach some sort of potential middle ground. Commissioner Goodman.
Are you talking about pushing it to the January public meeting?
Yes.
I take a Senator Reed's
yes.
not retiring.
Right. I was going to say, this is one of the rare instances where I can tell you I don't have urgency.
I think, tell me
what time
January,
you all need, and that's
I'd
fine.
Say January.
I would ask counsel what would be a couple of days after the next, well, the scheduled meeting proposed on the calendar that I think we're going to adopt today.
Right.
What would be about 3 days after that?
I think the proposed schedule has the 14th as the first meeting, so if that's a Thursday, the 18th.
You'd want to go to the following Monday, I think.
Rather than one day.
Or maybe the next Tuesday.
There's no time pressure on it. So this is really one of those places to take advantage of whatever.
And I take it by your comments that you'd accept that.
That's what I'm saying. And so you pick a date, and that's
you're
fine.
You're fine with it.
I'm fine with it. You can pick it out, and frankly,
Commissioner
after
Goodman.
You.
I'm sorry.
We can deal with this after.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say you can. I'll be amenable to anything that's before November of next year.
I think that's a constructive approach. I'm still struggling with some of these issues.
Yeah. Right.
And so I would like more time. And I think this colloquy helps crystallize some issues. But I do have a couple more questions Mr. Elias here.
Please go forward.
What's unique about this is. This is personal use, and in the regulations, it is specifically a case-by-case determination, personal use. We have other areas that are case-by-case. Not everything is a case-by-case.
I agree.
However, you argue here today that members of Congress have relied and are relying on the carry AO to comport their behavior. And if we issue this opinion, members of Congress will rely on, they will look to this AO to comport their behavior. And there is the specific provision in the advisory opinion regulation that someone who has materially the same circumstances. And so the distinction between a 30-year member who was a leader versus a 10-year member who was an assistant whip may be lost on many people. So I think we do have to consider what message this sends to members about whether they're going to be able to retire with an administrative pension fund to pay for post-retirement speaking, writing, and to offset the expenses of travel and what have you. So I do think we have to consider that. But I do think your point about thinking very hard about the carry opinion and how we write, however we decide this use is an important thing we need to consider. So I appreciate more time to do that. Let me ask you, if, and this is a hypothetical, if it appeared that given the four commissioners who comprise the commission on this issue, because two are recused, that on the issue of personal use, there was going to be a split of 3-1, and that was unavoidable. Would you then like us to address the issue of leadership PAC funds and their use? Would you then like us to, if the first question is going to be 3-1?
So I don't know. I'd like to think about that, and I'd like to talk to. I'd like to talk internally about it. I'd like to talk to the General Counsel's office about it. I will invite something which I don't think has ever been said in a public meeting, but I'll say it. I would invite frankly, having ex parte communications with you all. You are free to note them. My position is going to be the same in private as it was in public. I'll happy to, you know, they can be videotaped as far as I'm concerned. But the rules permit ex parte communications around these things. They just require that they be noted. And if this is a place, and it may not be, this may be that it is easier for you all to work it out without us in being involved. But if this is a place where a continued discussion about some of these issues is useful, you know, I will just tell you, I do not have an aversion to you saying, you know, I talked to Mark Elias, I asked his opinion. I mean, my opinion is we filed comments what our opinion is. So I only offer that in that the, I have no I'm not going to proactively interject myself in your discussions as you go forward, but if there is a useful dialogue to be had around some of this, you know, I'm happy to continue to have it.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Goodman.
Just so that I understand the your nuanced legal proposition to us, I take it that your argument that Senator Reid can take the funds left over in campaign account for these types of retirement activities is based on sort of a twofold legal argument, and one is under 113.2 that in your position they would constitute the ordinary and necessary expenses in connection with the senator's duties as a holder of federal office. In other words, under 113 point, I think you concede that these are not campaign expenditures. And so we have to begin our analysis at 113.2, which is permissible non-campaign use of funds. Just so let me know if I'm not following the legal analysis. So no one is contending that these are campaign expenditures. In your request,
that's what I'm looking
you
at.
Make clear, for example, on page, I'm missing a page number, page 2, that the materials that will be worked on and on which this administrative expenditure will be made relate to Leader Reid's tenure in office.
Right.
In other words, there's not an argument that it arises from as residual from a campaign.
No, I think that's right. I think to the extent there is residual from the campaign, frankly, I didn't feel like I needed to.
I understand. I just want to be sure I'm analyzing this through the right rubric. Yeah. Okay. So we need to refer to section 113.2, permissible non-campaign use of funds, which leads off that a permissible non-use will be ordinary and necessary expenses. Mm-hmm. In connection with the senator's duties as a holder of federal office as point one.
Right.
And then one of those enumerated examples would be any other lawful purpose.
Right.
Okay? So it could be either, really. I mean,
right.
One's an example, but it's not limited to the enumerated ones. So if I don't find it to be a necessary expense in connection with the senator's duties as a former holder of federal office, I might nonetheless find that it's an other lawful
purpose,
in which case I'm then thrust upon determining whether I think this is personal use or not.
Correct.
Under 113.1.
Exactly.
Am I at least walking through
yes,
the correct analysis?
You are.
Now, am I missing any other analytical step?
No.
Okay, thank you.
No, that's.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's good discussion. And I think you're here. You don't have to get up. You do not have to get up. Absolutely. Okay. Of course, I have to. All right. So